You're listening to Family Personalities, a podcast where we use personality type to help change the way you think about your family. I'm Sandra Etherington, your personality type practitioner.
And I'm Em Levy, personality type enthusiast.
Join us while we talk about family, relationships, and parenting, all within the context of personality type. Well, today I get to talk about myself a lot.
Yay!
When I was writing this outline yesterday or the day before, actually, this one took me like little sessions over a few different days, but I had like 10 examples for every single bullet point of myself. And I think it'll be, we have a lot of INFJ listeners, so hopefully there will be a lot of head nodding out, going on out there and relating.
I would imagine there will be a ton.
All right, should we dive in?
Let's dive in. This is your moment.
So today we're talking about the cognitive function of introverted intuition, which I call insightful intuition, and how that shows up in parents. And this is the function, the dominant function, that driver function, that one that's in our driver's seat for INFJs and INTJs. So that's mine. And it's the second function, the auxiliary or the co-pilot, depending on what terminology you use, that's kind of your backup function for ENFJs and ENTJs. If this is all garbledygook to you and you don't know what a cognitive function is, I recommend going to episode 39 to listen to our introduction to cognitive functions. You can also check out my cognitive functions cheat sheet at familypersonalities.com/functions. And you can find all the basics of Myers-Briggs at familypersonalities.com/basics if you're brand new to Myers-Briggs. Let me help you parent more easily and peacefully through the use of personality type. I give your family basically an instruction manual to understand your kiddo and your parenting partner and yourself and what motivates them and how to communicate with them and to create more peace within the family unit. You can sign up today or schedule a quick Zoom to ask questions at familypersonalities.com/services. So again, today we're talking about how the cognitive function of introverted intuition, which I call insightful intuition, shows up in parents. It's the dominant function for INFJs and INTJs. So a lot of what we're talking about today is like going to resonate most if you have INFJ or INTJ preferences. And it's the second function for ENFJs and ENTJs. So ENFJs, ENTJs, they're going to notice this too, but this is a secondary function. It's when they're going to their more introverted part of themselves, this is what they're using. And so it's not going to be, some of the bullet points aren't going to apply as much and some of them still will. Now, this function is interesting. It's the rarest of all the functions.
Do you love that it's the rarest and it's yours? Like, I feel like at Enneagram 1, it would be just be like, yes!
Yeah, like, I mean, it helps explain why, you know, maybe your whole life you had this feeling that you just aren't jiving with so many people.
You can say it. I'm rare and special.
I'm a special snowflake. But yeah, and it's so those four types, INFJs, INTJs, ENFJs, ENTJs, are all respectively each less than 2% of the population. And it used to be INFJs used to be the rarest type based on the statistics. And now newer statistics are showing that INFJs are not the rarest, which I'm sure all INFJs everywhere hate. But it's actually ENTJs that is now, based on the latest findings, the rarest type. But all four of those are the four rarest types. And we all use this function. And this function is the rarest of all the functions. So we'll be talking about how this function looks when it's in the front seat of your car. So remember in that intro to cognitive functions episode, we talked about front seat functions and back seat functions. So today we're talking about what it looks like when it's in the front seat of your car, which is those four types. And for types who use it in the back seat as your third or fourth function, you'll have to stay tuned to when we get into the back seat functions someday.
I was thinking about you earlier, you were saying auxiliary versus co-pilot. I feel like co-pilot is a lot easier for me to visualize. But I was also thinking about this the other day with the metaphor of the car. Let's say if we have like a minivan, the way I grew up, the oldest seats got the oldest kids. I come from like lots of kids. They got the captain's chairs and the smallest kids had to sit in the backpack. And so I kind of like was thinking about that, how it's like your parents are in the front, the, you know, middle kids and, you know, and in the back you've got like toddlers or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, if you picture your family in a car, it can really help you understand how these functions each show up in you. Your front seat functions are a little more in charge. They're more your parents. They tend to be more confident and strong as well. You know, I mean, some kids are very confident.
That's true. That's maybe, true.
Maybe they shouldn't be. Let's they aren't developed enough, but they think they are. Which some of us have that relationship with our backseat functions as well. I do with my thinking function. I think I'm overconfident with how good I am at it.
I always say wrong, but never doubtful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know lots of people who are wrong and never doubtful.
Yeah.
So insightful intuition. First of all, this is an introverted function. So the functions are all either introverted or extroverted. And the introverted functions deal with our inner world. This is in contrast to the last function that we talked about for the last few episodes, imaginative intuition, which was an extroverted function. So this is our introverted intuition function. It deals with our inner world. It's also a perceiving function, which basically just means it deals with how we take in information. All the sensing and intuition functions deal with how we take in information from the world. So here's kind of my little definition of what insightful intuition is. Insightful intuition users take in information by looking for hidden meanings and patterns and extrapolating them into the bigger picture and an insight for the future. So this is similar to imaginative intuition, because imaginative intuition was also about, like, you know, patterns and meanings. But for imaginative intuition, it's more about all the possibilities, all the combinations. And insightful intuition kind of is siphoning all these patterns and stuff that they're seeing into, like, this one insight for the future, or this one big picture aha that they get out of things.
So when you say patterns, mm-hmm. like, what do you mean by, like, patterns? You know, I think, like, see patterns and think, like, people who are into, like, numerology. I don't think that's what mm-hmm. you mean at all, right?
It could be numerology. We'll get into this a little bit more later, but there's a... Because it's such an introverted function, we tend to observe our own patterns of thinking, and their own patterns are in our behavior. And we use those to understand ourselves better, to understand our thinking better, and then to predict what will happen in the future and the patterns of what's going on around us and what will happen in the future based on those. So, like, I a lot of times will have these feelings about what I think is going to happen that seems obvious to me and no one else seems to be picking up on it. And it's hard for me to even explain how I got there. Like, I, mm-hmm. you know, what Eric and I mentioned very briefly on when we did our Valentine's episode, we met at work, and how the first night we met, we were, you know, in kind of like our sarcastic teasing way, we're telling everyone, like, we're all going to be fired soon. Like, there's, you know, weird things are happening. I think everyone's going to get laid off. And this was just before the 2008 crash, or as it was happening, but no one was really realizing was happening yet. And 6 months later, like, half of the people in that room with us were laid off. But it's just like, we were picking up on these patterns and things that were happening and creating them into a prediction for what was going to happen in the future.
Got it. So, like, very good at, like, analytical skills. Like, economists would probably be very good at this, right? So they're, like, taking out patterns and they're synthesizing them. In your daily life, how does that show up? Just so I can, like, better understand.
Well, let's go into the bullet points, because I think that'll... Okay. And then tell me if you still have that question at the end. Okay, so there's kind of... I honed this down into four facets. And the first one is about these future insights that we get. And Dario Nardi, one of my favorite people who does work in this space, he calls this function keen foreseeing. And it's kind of like this awareness and constant observing and processing of complex patterns, and a desire and need and want to extrapolate these patterns to predict what will happen in the future. It's the most future-oriented of all the functions. People who use this function, we're always in our heads living in the future. Like, I experience the future before the future even happens. Even when it doesn't happen, I've experienced it that way in my head. And I, like, live, I'm constantly, like, in the future in my head.
Question. Is that why sometimes you get frustrated more about the expectations you put on the future?
Yeah, because exactly.
Because you feel them in a more vivid way.
Yeah.
Than maybe other people?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's very helpful.
Yeah, I feel like it has already happened, and or it's going to happen exactly this way, and then it doesn't. And I'm like, what? What happened? Like, this was a reality to me that didn't occur in actual reality.
I feel like I understand that now in a way, actually, I haven't got before.
And since this is an introverted process, it's a very internal process. And so most people looking in from the outside aren't going to see me doing this. In fact, I might not even be 100% aware of how it's happening inside of me, because it can be a very subconscious process. So most people have no idea, all the calculations that are going inside to arrive at these insights. And so we'll have a hard time even explaining our own process when asked. For me, this happens in the shower. It's like when I'm like kind of like sensory deprivation or just like it can, it's like all of a sudden all these little things are percolating in my mind and then I'll just have like an aha moment of like, oh, I found the pattern that explains this. I found the thing that I'm going to do now. I see this vision for how this is going to work. And so, you know, the last function that we talked about, the other type of intuition, imaginative intuition or extroverted intuition, is also future oriented, but it's much more broad. It's about all the different possibilities, whereas insightful intuition is more focused in finding the one clear insight to the future. But to be clear, even though it's, you know, focused in that that's the outcome of it, it doesn't feel focused when it's working through. It feels very scattered until that aha insight comes through.
And this is because people who are introverted also just are in their heads more. Do you think it's also just the observation is more keen for introverts?
Yeah. Prefer introversion, we just tend to spend more time on the inside, reflecting, thinking, analyzing, feeling. So then the second facet of insightful intuition is perspective taking. And Personality Hacker actually uses the nickname for this cognitive function as their nickname for it is perspectives. So insightful intuition users are really good at perspective taking, seeing things from other angles, and they can switch from one perspective to another to think things through. They're almost detached from their own perspective because they can just like switch and view from another angle. Like if you think of like viewing something from another camera angle, everything they see, they can switch from one perspective to another.
That's so interesting that you bring up that point because, again, why I was late to this podcast. Good. Me all over the place. I was listening to Secretary Clinton speak about her time in Northern Ireland, specifically speaking about diplomacy and the Good Friday Agreement and how, you know, Northern Ireland right now is just a hotspot of political uprising, kind of like what we're experiencing here. And she was saying in the beginning of the diplomatic process, like the two sides wouldn't even listen to the words that the other people were saying. Mm. They would have someone repeat them and then say it to them because they were that far apart. But what actually brought them together was their shared perspective around like their family safety. Mm. And like that was the turning point in that diplomacy. As one said, like, I'm really nervous about my kid coming home. And it was like that thing that allowed them to shift their perspective. Mm. And so I would imagine that people who maybe are therapists or diplomats or whatever have to be so good at that to like see another person's perspective, to like get the people who are on the other side to see that in each other, if that makes any sense.
That's a really good example. And INFJs in particular often find themselves as therapists, and I could see like diplomats also, because there's the feeling piece and the being able to and making it more humanistic and about people. Whereas maybe on the INTJ side, there might be some of that, but they're a little more focused on like process and getting things done. And, you know, Eric's really good. My husband uses INTJ preferences. So he also uses this function as his dominant. And in the business world, he's really good at seeing all the angles of the problem and, you know, the different perspectives of the different solutions we could put into place. So it can be people related or not. Then the third facet is that it's very self-observing and growth-oriented. So I mentioned before, there's kind of a detachment from one's own perspective that allows people who use this function to be observant of their own process and their own patterns and have an interest in improving them. So this leads us to have a lot of us to have a general bent towards finding insights that will transform the self. And you can see why we have so many INFJ listeners to this podcast.
That makes sense.
And then the fourth facet is novel problem solving. So we tend to be attracted, just like imaginative intuition users, we tend to be attracted to novelty. And we find this really comfortable enjoyment at solving new challenges that we've never seen before. We use the patterns that we've observed and stored as insights to solve problems in new ways. And actually, this was one of the interesting things that when I was reading Dario Nardi's The Neuroscience of Personality, where he actually was looking at brain scans, EEG scans of people's neocortex and comparing them across across Myers-Briggs types and specifically the cognitive functions. I'll try in with each cognitive function to kind of point out something interesting that he noticed in people's brains about that cognitive function. But one of the things he looked at was what puts people into what he calls a Zen state. So there's a way that our brain shows up on the imaging when we're in a quote unquote Zen state, which is like when your brain is awake and happy and relaxed. So most people, regardless of your personality type, get into this when they are when they're engaged in their own area of expertise. So something they've honed and practiced and has become second nature and enjoyable, but not in like a boring way. That means your mind is in this Zen state. So he noticed that people who use introverted intuition, especially as their dominant function, enter their Zen state doing the opposite of doing something they've honed. It's actually when they're solving new complex problems they've never seen before, or when they're envisioning the future.
Ah, that sounds like you.
It is me. I get so excited by
that's you.
How are we gonna do this? What's the best way to do this? You know, and like the finding a new way to do something is so exciting for me. And that's part of all the joy I've had from building this business is that I don't know anyone else doing this, bringing personality type into the family and parenting like I'm trying to do. And so I get to invent it. And that's really exciting for me.
Thondra, I just heard Bill Burr's rant saying how women should be supporting female athletes and not Real Housewives who just yell at each other.
That's ridiculous. Real Housewives is a sport. Join us on From the Bleachers, where we analyze the strategy and gameplay that our favorite reality stars use to earn additional seasons of play and social media fame.
And if you're lucky, Sandra will pull out her apology play rubric so you can all see what an easy grader I am.
I'm sorry, Mandy, but if you think Monica's apology to Heather on Salt Lake City deserved anything over a 2.5, you're delusional.
Whether we're breaking down confrontation play, relishing the bravo, bravo, bravo moments, or awarding a tardy for the party, we are the only place you'll find in-depth analysis of the plays that your favorite housewives are making on our screens.
From the Bleachers, a Real Housewives game analysis is available everywhere podcasts live.
And when I think about your career and like auditing and stuff, like that's looking for a needle in a haystack sometimes.
That's not like, but that's more like searching for details. And it was a lot of just busy work.
You would hate that.
I had to do a lot of like testing where it's like you're looking through documents and you're making sure the right signature's in the right place on these 50 samples that you've pulled. And then you have to document that and write out what you did detail by detail. It was horrifyingly boring.
That sounds very dry.
There were little aspects of my job where I got to pull in this function, but most of it did not fill my bucket.
I would not think so, no.
Okay, so those were our four facets of insightful intuition. The future insights, the perspective taking, self-observing and growth-oriented, and novel problem solving. So because we already talked about imaginative intuition, the extroverted version of this function, I just wanted to give a little quick comparison. They're both intuition. So they're both based in ideas, theories, meanings, and big picture. That's the type of information that both intuition types like to take in. But the extroverted intuition or the imaginative intuition that we talked about last, which is ENFPs and ENTPs, is more broad, whereas this function, this introverted or insightful intuition, is more focused. So it's like the broad one is about all the possibilities, whereas insightful intuition is the more one clear, perfect way to solve a problem and predict the future. And then insightful intuition is more internal, it's more introverted, whereas extroverted intuition is more external and it's more extroverted. So like the internal one is more internally observant. It needs a lot of quiet and peace in order to work. Whereas the extrovert intuition or the imaginative intuition that we talked about last is more about talking it through with people or directly experiencing the thing. And that's how their intuition works better. Does that resonate with you at all? Because I know it's your second function, so it's not your dominant as much. But do you feel like you're more of a work through ideas that way?
Yeah, a little bit. Mostly I've been just like sitting here thinking like, wow, I really understand Sandra more.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. No,
there's nothing we like more than being understood.
Yeah. Like I totally, like even we were just talking about on our bonus episode where you said that you had this future idea of things for the podcast and how frustrating that was. Mm. I mean, I understood it in the sense that I absolutely heard you and felt like empathy or whatever, but now I get it more, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Because as someone who I'm future oriented, very much so, but not in the same way, not in the actual, you know how you were saying it's more honed? Like I am very future oriented and have like a million things, whatever, but yet still focused toward the future, but not to the specific, you pictured exactly what it you wanted it to look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I never do that. And so now I have a better understanding of like, I have a better understanding.
By the way, I was wrong. I said I edit out a ton of likes. I actually don't. I realized as I was editing the last couple days, now that you said that, it's ums that I edit out for you. Like it's a pause, you know, pause. Mm-hmm. And you say I edit out those. It's really hard to edit out the likes because they're right in the middle of the sentence. Yeah. So the amount of likes you hear are the amount of likes you say. I'm just saying that.
That's good. That makes me feel a little better.
I interrupted your thought.
That you picture the actual event or the final destination with a different level of clarity that creates an emotional attachment that I didn't fully capture.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing
that
it.
That makes sense.
There's a big like emotional attachment to these future ideas that we see so clearly and really want to realize. All right, so let's talk about the potential struggles for people who use this function. Big difficulty just relaxing and being in the moment. So we're so in our heads, mulling everything over, that the outside world feels distracting, frustrating, or annoying. And sometimes we can have a tendency to block that out and not even notice it, which is what I see my husband, my INTJ husband, doing a lot. We'll be having this whole conversation in the car, like as a family, and I like say something to Eric, and it's like he's hasn't heard a word of it. He's blocked it out. He's in his head. He's probably thinking about some future thing with work or whatever it is. We need a significant amount of alone and quiet time, possibly more than any other introverted type. That's debatable, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think that INFJs, INTJs need more than any other introverted type. The reason that I say that is because all introverted types have an introverted function as their driver, and they need to be able to have like the quiet and space to go into it. But because of there's such a harm for interruption and noise to this process, because like I said, when it's happening, it feels kind of chaotic. There's all these patterns and swirling ideas and meanings, and we have to do that process all the way through from start to finish. If it gets interrupted, it's like we start back from zero, we lose it. And it has to complete through to the end to that aha moment to have really filled our bucket and given us what we need. And so it's like we need these long, uninterrupted periods of time to really get that need met.
Which makes sense why COVID was so challenging.
With my kids around 24/7. Yeah, I did not have the time for, you know, that just being in my head and creating these insights that I really need. Another struggle can be that oftentimes we can follow systems of thinking that can seem strange or bizarre to others. Often something that made sense in another era or situation. And this is maybe an example of how it can be one-sided, this function. So just, you know, maybe a more healthy example is that Eric and I, you know, we aren't at the moment doing this, but we adopted plant-based eating. And we were given the side eye by all the family that's like, you're doing what? You're not eating any dairy or meat? What about your kids? You're not feeding that to them, you know? But more extreme examples could be like pseudo-sciencey things like coffee enemas, or, you know, extreme example might be urine therapy, which I heard about on Oh No, Ross and Carrie, one of my favorite podcasts, and they actually engaged in urine therapy, which, by the way, is drinking your own pee. And there's a whole community of people who swear by urine therapy, and probably a lot of them
at least you want to get
use this function.
It's like you get a little too goopy, right? Like the Gwyneth Paltrow goop brand where...
I've never heard that word to describe it, goopy.
Yeah, I think that fits.
Another struggle can be being overly focused on self-improvement theories and self-improvement learning to the point of neglecting present practical physical needs or actually implementing the daily work required to improve. So like going to all the self-improvement workshops, listening to podcasts like this one, but not scheduling that doctor appointment that you need to take care of hip pain.
Sandra, schedule that appointment.
I did yesterday. Okay, good. And this is a part of this business that I struggle with the most in two ways. In one, in what I provide for people, is that I love talking about the theory of it and going through like, this is what it looks like in your kids. This is what it looks like in you. Isn't that interesting? Let's talk about it. But actually giving practical advice, here's how you can implement something that will help. That's the stretch for me in my business. And then also as running the business, I love learning about what I'm going to do with this business and like, oh, here's the best way to tackle marketing. And here's the best way to, you know, really reach people and make sure they're listening. But then to actually go and complete the steps necessary to make those improvements, that part doesn't always come. Sometimes I feel like I've done it just because I've listened and learned. And then I've envisioned that future thing of me doing it. And it feels like I've done it, even though I haven't.
Ah, that's really interesting.
We can go to these self-improvement workshops and be like, I've thought it all out and it feels like now I've done it, but you may not have actually implemented the steps to do it and really improve.
Like the people that like weaponize the words like boundaries.
Sure. Like claim they have boundaries when they don't.
Yeah, yeah. Or just, you know, people who can take healthy language because they're like very up on the language and weaponize it.
Oh, yeah. I'm creating a boundary with you, but what they're really doing is cutting you off without hearing your side.
Yeah, or I think a great example, and I learned this in therapy, that we can only have boundaries for ourselves, not others. Victoria on The Bachelor. Remember, she would say, like, I'm a very empathetic person. I have boundaries, I have whatever. And she was, like, the one that was, like, the causing of all the problems. I'm like, I'm glad you listened to all those whatever, but, like, the self-work was not there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I could maybe see that a little bit here. Although my guess would be that that might be like Victoria, for example, might be someone who actually has this as a backseat function.
Ah, okay. I'm glad I said that because that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then another struggle can be unrealistic goals and visions for the future, creating this constant disappointment or inability to let go of a certain vision when reality is getting in the way. And we talked about this on the bonus episode about my vision for the business and the podcast versus the reality of all the time it takes to build what's in my head and all the things that are necessary for building that. And the fact that the actual work involved in that is something that I don't have time for. And even if I would I really want to? But then I have this disappointment because my vision of what I wanted it to be was so strong and reality to get there was hard for me to factor in. Like, and it was the same for me with having kids. Like I had just this beautiful idea of my family. I was going to have 3 kids. They were going to be 18 months apart. And gosh, it was going to be so wonderful. We were going to be connecting all the time and doing all the things that I love. I had no idea what the practical day-to-day was like of a parent. And some of us didn't because of age or because we haven't been exposed to it. But I think with this function, we're even worse at trying to take in, at paying attention to practical things. And to the point where like I was very one-sided with this function at the time, I would say, where I, even after I had one, so I had troubles along the way getting pregnant. So I had a couple of miscarriages before I had Riker. I entered into it in maybe not the best mentally healthy space. And then I had a difficult pregnancy with him. And then he was like monster baby. He was like super colicky. He didn't sleep for more than like 40 minutes at night. And even when the practical reality was slapping me across the face about how hard parenthood was, I still didn't see it. I just like kept driving forward with blinders on towards my vision. I was like, we had trouble getting pregnant, so now we must try right away to get pregnant because I don't know how long it will take and I need my kids to be close together. That's the vision. That's the beautiful vision. And I just kept going. And even though I was sleep deprived and people would be like, oh, just wait till you had the second. It's so much harder. And I was just like, but it's going to be beautiful. You know what I mean? I have this beautiful vision. And I really drove myself to a really bad place mental health wise. I had, you know, more pregnancies, more miscarriages, but I just kept driving forward. And Riker was like such an intense baby and toddler that maybe if I'd taken time for him to get a little older and spaced it out a little more, that might have eased everything on our whole family. And then, you know, eventually we had Ripley and I just tumbled down into like this deep, dark depression because I had just put myself through everything to build this beautiful vision without thinking about what reality was actually giving me and what's practically involved in taking care of a baby and a toddler. I had no idea. It was like a rude awakening. And then I did eventually wake up and be like, oh, like this is, you know, I got to a point where I was barely functioning. And then we did not have the third kid. FYI.
Do you think, like, as far as the vision, like after Ripley, at what, was there any point where you're like, I have this vision, it's not matching up to my reality, or was it always concurrently in your head?
It was there, and people try and give advice, unsolicited advice all the time, especially when you're going through infertility or recurrent miscarriage or whatever. But I just would just push it away, you know? People would be like, you can just have one kid. Having an only child is great, too. And I, you know, I just didn't want that. And it was really hard for me to even consider it. And this is something that imaginative intuition is much better because they can see all the possibilities. Like they can envision side by side the family of five kids and the just one, or the life without the kids, or the whatever, like better at like all the possibilities. And we all have access to all of the functions, by the way, just because I'm, you know, I don't have extroverted or imaginative intuition in my four functions doesn't mean I can't use that. There's Dario Nardi actually has a great book that he wrote in the last year called The Magic Diamond, where he talks about how we use all eight functions and what that looks like. And so that is actually where I feel like I've been at in my development the last few years, is actually adding in my fifth and sixth function. But this is like a whole nother layer that we're just not getting to at this point in the podcast yet. But
so maybe the practical advice is, if you have this function, maybe your partner or a friend or even yourself can say, like, let me step outside of myself for a moment. Like, is this the vision or is this the reality? Because I can see how the vision is really amazing and how you get stuff done and build things, but also can be very detrimental to your mental health.
Yeah. And it's definitely served me well. I used to think of my, like, put my blinders on and drive to get exactly what I want as only a positive trait, and it can be a positive trait, but this is an instance in my life where it hurt me a lot and my family. So then one last struggle I have here, being so attracted to novelty that you're reinventing the wheel when the wheel's working just fine. So I talked about how I love to find new ways of doing things. And like, that's what gets introverted intuition going. That makes us so excited. But we could be just doing something that someone else has already done and save ourselves a lot of time and work, or they've actually done it better. And so maybe we should just go with that, right? So like, I used to create these elaborate spreadsheets to solve problems because I had so much fun like designing it. And someone would be like, well, there's an app for that. Like, why did you go through all this effort to create it? Or like with the cognitive functions, I went back, now that I'm so aware of this in myself, I have like I have lots of internal struggles where like, I know that I tend to, even with the last one that we talked about where I hold tight to visions, I've been doing that a lot lately. I'm like, am I holding too tight to this vision of this business and what it's going to be? Like, do I need to like wake up to reality or see alternatives with that? But with this one, with the reinventing the wheel, we have the cognitive functions, right? And I created my own nicknames for that. I went back and forth and back and forth on whether I should create my own nicknames because I wanted to, And I had a great idea, which is that no one has, that I know of, has done, which is, you know, Personality Hacker has great nicknames for the cognitive functions. Dario Nardi has some. I'm sure there's lots of others out there. But no, none that I know include the name of the preference. So it's like Personality Hacker calls introverted feeling authenticity. But from the word authenticity, you don't know that authenticity is a feeling function. So I wanted to have resonant feeling. So you understand that this is a feeling function we're talking about. And so I went back and forth, like, am I just recreating the wheel? Should I just use somebody else's? Like, am I just being too one-sided with my introverted intuition? Or is this actually practically helpful that I'm going to be, you know, doing this whole new naming system? Eventually, I decided on doing the new naming system for various reasons, partly because I felt like if I was using someone else's naming system, I would have to, every single time I said the name, I'd have to cite them, which is not even a legal thing, because I don't think you can, from what I understand, you can't copyright labels, but just like a moral thing. I felt like I had to give credit.
It's a professional courtesy thing. Yeah.
So I was like, it'll just be easier if I just have my own and whatever. So that's what I did.
And it's fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about the parenting style of people who use this function. What do our INTJ, INFJ, and also ENFJ and ENTJ parents look like when they use this function? So they tend to approach parenting with a goal of personal growth and might also project this onto their parenting partner and kids. So this idea that everyone should be growing and learning, observing their own patterns of behavior and improving upon them. They tend to be attracted to new or interesting parenting practices and strategies. And we talked about this just with intuition in general in our intuition versus sensing episodes. But like the, you know, I did baby-led weaning. I was like, I'm going to feed my kids in this way. That sounds new and interesting. And like I, all the models of parenting, the respectful parenting and the conscious parenting. And like, I want to learn about the new ones and then pick the one that I think is the most ideal and best and let, and implement that one.
That's fascinating to me. You want to know how many parenting books I read? Zero.
Zero.
I have read zero parenting books.
Okay, this is a little embarrassing to admit, but not only parenting books, but pregnancy and birthing books.
Oh.
For giving birth, I read six.
Six? I didn't read any.
And I put tabs on them and would like refer to them. And yeah, I was all in. I was like, I'm doing this the right way, baby.
That's amazing. I mean, I wish I had done a little bit of that. I mean, I was very, very sick with June and I was very, very weak. And my
And
thought,
you were working
a very a high firm, stress right? job. Yeah.
For me, I had literally just, when I got pregnant with him, I had just finished my teaching credential program and it just didn't make sense to start teaching when I was going to be giving birth 3 months later. So I was unemployed through my whole pregnancy. So I had nothing to do but think about the fact that I was having this baby. Hopefully I was knocking wood the whole time that I was having this baby. So it was like, I was
birthing
all.
The experience. Like, yeah, I can see that. I just, my only thought was, well, people have been doing this for centuries. It'll be fine. My body will know what to do. Like that was my only birthing plan, was that my body would know what to do. And I actually had a really great birth, but I think I just got lucky.
Yeah, I actually, I did it completely different with Ripley because the experience with Riker was not so great. But, you know, live and learn.
Yeah.
More on the parenting style. We need a lot of alone time away from the kids and parenting partner. We talked about how this function just needs that quiet alone time to do its work, to get to that aha moment. And so, you know, we need a lot of time alone. If you're a parent, like, try and see where you can build that in. It can be hard depending on what stage of life you're at, what age your kids are, what your the rest of your life looks like as far as like, do you have a very social job or whatever. We tend to take parenting very seriously and might come off as intense. I think this has to do with that inner always looking and observing the patterns and trying to grow. We're always trying, we take parenting very seriously. Like, am I doing this right? I'm going to analyze what I'm doing during my parenting and whether I'm doing it in the best way. Can struggle with the routine details necessary to support the family and household, because that takes us out of our intuition function. Like, we have to come out into the present moment and deal with the physical realities of the world. And that takes away from our best, our most natural and comfortable way of being. And this is huge for me. I didn't have a concept for how bad I was with routine details until that became my job as a stay-at-home parent. And then I was like, holy moly, I hate doing this.
It's the worst. I feel like I always think like this has to be the hardest for everyone. I was watching The Simpsons last night, and I don't know why I've gotten into The Simpsons lately, but like Marge was like talking about how like she loves the routine and like how she got onto like the space station with Lisa, and she was just like killing it because like their star performer, because she was just like so good at the like the routine. And I was like, that was written by a man.
No, I think that was written by a sensing judger. By someone who uses preservation sensing.
Oh.
They may have unrealistic expectations of themselves or of others because of those visions they hold in their head. Like, this is how I envision our family being when we're together. This is how I envision my children performing in school because of the potential I see in them. This is how I envision myself parenting, and I don't envision myself getting upset, you know, whatever. And then, you know, there's the disappointment that comes with reality. They can be really creative in organizing fun and stimulating activities, projects, and parties because of that want to do things in new ways and look for the novel and the new and the fun.
You bought your fun, children fun a right. gerbil.
I did go out and buy my children gerbils. Two gerbils.
Two gerbils.
They're running the wheel right now downstairs. Run.
Gerbils, and you had your kids like create gerbil toys habitats. Yeah. Like that's as like novel and as creative as you get.
Yeah, when I have the energy, I really get into the fun, creative stuff with them. But it's like I want to do more of that, but then if I don't get my alone quiet time, then I can't do that. So there's just kind of this back and forth. But
no, there's your practical tip is the balance of that. Like I can do this and I know I'm going to need to rest a little bit. It can't be like this all the time.
Right. Yeah. And then people who use this function tend to like to teach kids all of the perspectives about all of the things. So when the kid comes home with like, we learned this at school. Oh, well, let me tell you this other perspective of that or this other perspective. Let's look at this in a new perspective. And I would say this is INFJs also, but especially INTJs really get so much out of teaching their kids things and really helping them analyze and look at things on a deep level. And then we really want to understand our kids on a deeper level. Hello, listeners. That's what we're here on this podcast to do. But just really we like to observe our own patterns. We like to observe the patterns of our kids too and really understand what that means. And then lastly, we have immense difficulty with the noise and confusion of childhood and family life. So this is a bit in contrast with the other type of intuition, which does a lot better with this and the going with the flow of what's happening with all the crazy busy things and the interruptions and whatever else, because the interruptions disturb and get in the way of our most preferred process. It can be really difficult to deal with that.
Like the mess and the noise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, okay. Yes, the mess, the noise, the interruptions, the day not going as you thought it was going to go.
Man, maybe I'm just not a deep thinker. I think this is what I've arrived at.
Well,
I don't think about any of this.
Like, it depends on how you define deep thinking.
Well, we know like, I don't do it.
Well, you do like, but it's like extroverted intuition thinking, which is still deep in its own way. It's just more broad. I guess broad is not deep. That's right. You're right.
Yeah.
That's the other way.
Yeah. I think that I don't have an expectation for my day. And my brother says it all the time that like, and Sean are in the same way that like, we're so adaptable. Like we'll just go with the flow. Like it doesn't bother us. But we always joke is that we don't have expectations because we had such terrible childhoods. So we're like, we don't expect anything. But that is fascinating to me. Like, I'm just learning a lot. I feel like I should not be on the podcast, but like a listener to the podcast.
Well, you get to be both. Okay, so to sum it all up, introverted intuition or insightful intuition is an introverted function, deals with the inner world. It's a perceiving function, which means it deals with how we prefer to take in and deal with information. And insightful intuition users take in information by looking for hidden meanings and patterns and extrapolating them into the bigger picture and an insight for the future. They are great with self-reflection, seeing different perspectives and patterns, and solving novel problems and creating future insights. And they struggle with getting enough uninterrupted alone time, being in the present moment, and setting unrealistic goals or visions for the future and letting go of those. So write in or leave a comment. Are you someone who uses insightful intuition? Are you an INFJ, an INTJ, an ENFJ, an ENTJ? And do you notice these themes in your parenting? Please tell us about that. I would love to hear from you. You can send us an email at familypersonalitiespod@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes. And the show notes you can always find at familypersonalities.com/the episode number. And this is episode 47. Next, I have an INTJ parent. She actually was on 2 episodes ago, Elena Nola, to talk about her ENF or maybe TP son. But she's coming back on to talk about her experience as a parent who uses this function. And she has a lot of great insight because she actually uses Myers-Briggs in her work in coaching people. And so she's very aware of her introverted intuition function and has put a lot of things in place. She's also a single parent with an extroverted child. So she has really found systems that help her cope with this. And then we also have a parent with INFJ preferences coming on, Joanne Jarrett, who we did kind of a podcast sponsorship swap thing. So you have probably heard us mention her before, but she has INFJ preferences and older kids. And so she may have a lot to say, possibly with some tips as well for other INFJs out there. Don't forget, let me help you parent more easily and peacefully through the use of personality type at familypersonalities.com/services. Please rate, review, subscribe, and share. That's how we get the word out there about this. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Family Personalities, and you can follow M at Emerson4OR. And we'll see you next time. That's it for our show this week. We would like to apologize to our children, our parents, our spouses,
and anyone else we may have lovingly thrown under the bus this episode.
Thank you for listening, and catch us next time on the Family Personalities Podcast.